All right, guys, you've heard us talking all about Herd App Media and the team behind us and the millions, gazillions of reasons that we chose to work with them and how really, honestly, how far the Hollywood Rod podcast has come in the last few months. But really, Herd App Media is only one part of the Herd App organization.
Let us say that one of the reasons we chose Herd App was their reputation as one of the premier search engine optimization agencies out there. Honestly, I had no idea what that was until I came to Herd App. Search optimization, for those of you who don't know, is the practice of optimizing your website, podcast, YouTube videos, or anything else to be found as high as possible in Google search results. Herd App Marketing serves the marketing needs of companies of all sizes, from mom and pop shops to S&P 500 corporations. They work with nearly 3,000 business locations in 43 states, and this was a tipping point in the decision for Hollywood Raw.
So we knew that growing Hollywood Raw meant we needed to partner with someone bigger, someone with more experience, a media company that had a full marketing arm. And honestly, that's what Herd App Marketing brings to the table. So Herd App Marketing is not just SEO, as you heard Adam describe, which I'm pretty sure he has no idea what it is still. They're a full service marketing agency with literally every service under one roof. There's nothing outsourced to partners like a lot of the other big agencies do. And we mean everything: social media marketing, web design, content marketing, video production, branding, creative, SEO, SEM, local SEO, and all the SE whatevers they have. They have a team in-house to meet those needs and yours.
It's why you see our TikTok blowing up. It's insane. We are getting ready to launch a whole new website, and they are the power behind the news stories that'll be found on our website. They literally do it all for us, and they could do the same for you. So if you have a company that needs more customers or know somebody who needs new customers, you know by now that the internet is where you're going to find them, and Herd App Marketing is the company that will get you found more often than your competition. Find Herd App Marketing online at herdappmarketing.com. That's H-U-R-R-D-A-T, marketing.com. Or give them a call at 877-662-4443. What's up, Dex?
Hello, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to Hollywood Raw Podcast, the number one child slavery
trafficking
podcast. Hollywood.
I'm like, all right, where is he going with some crazy stuff today? Let's get into the mind of Adam.
Exactly. If you listen to another podcast, especially in the celebrity thing, you are supporting child trafficking. We are anti-child trafficking. So that's why
you have to listen to us.
Yeah, that's why you made a good decision by tuning into this podcast. We like to say on this podcast, we humanize celebrities. You know, we got Nick Ritchie coming on today's podcast. We'll get into him, but on this podcast, the Hollywood Raw podcast, I like to say that we reveal the fourth wall of Hollywood. We talk to the celebrities, we talk to the bodyguards, we talk to the publicists, we talk to, I mean, the writers.
Everyone. I think the biggest reactions that I always get back from people, like, we get these awesome celebs, you know, who have we had on? We've had on Tony Robbins and Mark Cuban Perez. Who else?
I mean, dude.
Larsa Pippen, obviously, was probably one of our biggest interviews. But I think people most respond to the paparazzi interviews. Like when we had Jessel, I got so many texts, so many responses. I love this guy. It's fun to hear behind the scenes of what it's like to be a paparazzo.
Yeah.
Same with celebrity? Oh, God, what is a YouTube page?
The Hollywood Fix.
Fletcher.
Fletcher, the Hollywood Fix. People love hearing
amazing the amount of people that have reached out to me after his interview. People just love this stuff.
Yeah, so if you're actually tuning into the episode now, that's, I would say, if you're looking back at our library, tune into the Hollywood Fix and also Jessel. Jessel is a great guy, and he's a really interesting photographer. Jessel was just in New York City shooting Angelina Jolie for like a week and traveling with the family. And I talked to him about it, and he was like, dude, like, I went into a museum with her. He was talking to Angie, like, as he's shooting her, like, she was totally cool with it. So he's a great photographer, great guy, really cool dude. That's a great listen. But again, we always like to say we humanize celebrities. We like to humanize Hollywood and reveal the fourth wall of Hollywood. And that's what we're doing on today's episode. We're talking to a guy who really is just a
change the game.
Nick Ritchie. Dax, how would you, explain to me Nick Ritchie.
So I've known Nick Ritchie for like almost 20 years now. He was the founder of the dirty.com, which was obviously a huge revolutionary website. And I say revolutionary, and it changed the game for covering celebs, for covering people. It paved the way for, I think, a lot of the bigger websites and just, you know, what you could post, what you can't post. I mean, people were going to this website. And if you remember back in like 2006, 7, 8, you know, this was the biggest website on the planet. And he was posting these, you know, photos or blind items or whatever about just people in general. It didn't even have to be celebrities, just people out there that maybe you didn't like or you did like, and giving them the kudos or trashing on them. But I feel that this website allowed like Des Moines to be around today, or, you know, even Perez to continue going. Like, I don't know. It was just a really interesting website for the time. Nick is no longer there. He left years ago. But I still want to dive into this with him and just see what it was like founding such an infamous website for so long, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He's definitely, and he's a wild guy. We'll see if he's still wild. He's been in the news and the headlines lately. Before we get to him, the best thing to do to support this podcast is leave a review, 5-star only. If you do that, we will read the review on, you know, we pick a review, we read it on the air, but that's the best thing to do to support this podcast because it helps out with the algorithm, which essentially that's how the dollars come in, you know? So, Dax, do you have a review for us today?
I do. All right, let's see. This is from C-Doll. It says, awesome. Just discovered this pod. Great interviewers with industry experience, engaging, and the guests are also top-notch. Excellent job, guys. Give me a job, says C-Doll. Oh, thanks.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank
that's
you
a good review.
I'd love to give you a job, but we drug test. Will you pass the drug test? We don't know.
No, the only way you get a job is if you fail the drug test.
Dude, I had a party.
No, and if, yeah. You know, obviously we keep inviting people to be a part of the show. So if you want to be a part of Fan Question Roulette, submit a video of yourself asking a question to a celeb. Problem is, you're not going to know the celeb. So it's got to be kind of an open question. Ask whatever you want, send it to us in the DMs on Instagram, either to us personally, but we prefer to the Hollywood Raw page. That way it just goes straight to our producers and we never get to see it. And it makes Fan Question Roulette even more fun. Or feel free to give us a call on our phone number and leave us a message. It's 833-HWR-LINE, 833-HWR-LINE. Leave us a drunk message. We're down for it.
Yeah, so last week on the podcast, we had Brandi Glanville, which made some headlines talking about her relationship with Leanne Rimes, talking about like everything Housewives.
Getting into Denise Richards and Denise liking her posts and Vanderpump's secret closet full of fur. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff.
There was a lot of good stuff. But today I'm excited, very excited for our guest today. Dax, tell us about our guest today.
All right. So our guest today is a huge personality in the land of Hollywood. He's an internet personality who was the founder of a very controversial gossip website called TheDirty.com. He is now the CEO of Celeb Magazine, and he is an OG of the Hollywood scene, Nick Ritchie.
So we are here with the legend, Nick Ritchie from TheDirty.com. I mean, I remember The Dirty, like when it first came out, my friends were hitting me up about The Dirty, like, man, this site is legendary. You know, for people who weren't familiar with The Dirty, how would you explain Nick, TheDirty.com?
I guess I'll take what the media says. It's the bathroom wall. it was basically a place, I call it civilian paparazzi, but it was a reality internet, a place where people could just vent their frustrations on their neighbor or their coworker or their girlfriend or ex-wife or whatever. It was awesome. You know, people would submit the world and I would be in there and I would pick and choose what would go up. And I would just throw in my 2 cents of what people wanted to know about a certain person. It was the first, the only way I like when I go out and I drink now with my buddies, I tell them like it was kind of like Yelp for people, you know.
Yeah, so, that's a good way to put it, actually.
Yeah. So, but I'm 4 years removed, so don't. I'm trying to be a normal guy like Dax now, and so let's not typecast me too much.
No. I was thinking back because TMZ was obviously rising at the same time the dirty.com was rising. So, you know, we obviously knew you guys over there. And I remember getting made fun of on the dirty.com. Like, what was it? Scissor hands? What was it called when you like do the peace sign?
Scissor game mafia.
Scissor game mafia. Yeah, no. But it was fun. It was a good website to go. And I mean, it's honestly just talking shit on other people. Hey, people listen, talking shit on other people, but it was entertaining.
It was a different time. Yep. And, you know, I don't think I could get away with it in this day and age. But back then people were into the sarcastic, dry humor, that I had. And, there was no like movements, you know. Now everything's a movement. You walk outside, it's a movement. So you have to just be careful. So you couldn't get away with it now, but back then there was no rules really, right? MySpace was starting to be like starting to fizzle out. Facebook was coming up. TMZ started blowing up, and we were just riding that wave of, and I think what really blew it up, Dax, was when we started posting the athletes, because the athletes didn't have, there wasn't TMZ Sports, there wasn't anything like that. And I remember when Matt Leinart and Nick Lachey were partying with those ASU girls, and Nick Lachey got busted or for cheating or something happened, and we broke that story with Leinart and the beer bong, and then the Cardinals benched him, you know, and then we were everywhere. So it was breaking little stories here and there that really catapulted, and obviously TMZ helped because they would piggyback the stories, and Harvey was a huge fan, and it just kind of made me who I was, you know?
How did you like actually start? Was it just like, oh, this is a fun idea, or like you were seeing stuff out there and you're like, this would be fun to have a website devoted towards,
and
like,
what year
people kind of talking smack on each other?
Like, what year are we talking around here?
I think we're talking like 2006 or seven, something like that.
Okay.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
And how do all great things start? They start because, you know, you're chasing a chick and you get mad at the girl and you get resentful and you decide that, you know, you need to talk trash on the person indirectly. So I started getting really, you know, mad at women and not from like a disgruntled point of view, but I was just like, okay, I was in Scottsdale, and Scottsdale at that time was the Dubai of America. And it was just, people were beautiful. Everyone was beautiful. So I was just making fun of, you know, the girls that thought they were Paris Hilton in Scottsdale. You know, they were just going out flaunting their plus twos, as I called them, the breast augmentations and their plastic surgery and all this stuff. And it just kind of went viral because there was nothing like it. Like, people were shocked. Like, how could you just put a picture of someone on the internet? It's pretty much like Instagram before Instagram, but there was privacy was still kind of a thing. And people were just like, how can you like talk about other people? They were just, their minds were blown. And then I started getting sued left and right. It was fun.
So
it was fun.
I mean, that's the wild part. You're getting sued. But I don't even know, you know, how were you able to get sued though? Because, you know, there is the freedom of the press, there's freedom of speech, but you know, why, how does it, you know, and we're not lawyers, but can you explain why there would be lawsuits though, or how there'd be possible?
Well, there was no case law for it. Like, there's the CDA, which is the Communications Decency Act, which was kind of the shield that I was using. But it never got really to a point, because the internet, there was nothing really like it. Like, the question was whether if a person who owned a website could be liable for third party content. And what happened was, is I took it a little bit to the extreme or to the edge. And eventually, you know, I was in two jury trials, got to superior court level, or the ninth circuit court level.
Court?
Yeah. And it became case law with that Sarah Jones, the Bengal cheerleader.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah. And I won that one. And then after that, it was crazy. After that, I never got sued again. And, the cool part was, is like, TMZ, Yahoo, Amazon, Zuckerberg, everyone wrote amicus briefs for me. They all had my back. All their lawyers were involved, because if I lost, everyone was screwed. Like, the internet was kind of, YouTube and Facebook and all these sites would have had to shut down. So it was kind of a huge, huge deal, and kind of made me infamous. Like, that was it. Like, as soon as I won that case, it was, that was, you know, the stamp,
and for people who are first listening though, Nick, what was that story, that big lawsuit?
So this cheerleader in Cincinnati got submitted to the site, and someone was saying that I think that she was sleeping with her students. I forgot what the post was about, and I made the remark, why are all teachers or high school teachers freaks in the sack? That was my remark. And they took it. They basically said, since I edited and wrote that, technically I'm an editor and not a content. I basically created the content. So that was their play. And they took it through the Kentucky court system. So you have to imagine me flying to Kentucky, sitting in two jury trials for, I don't know, 14 days or whatever it is. And the jury's all like female, old, Kentucky, you know? So they're looking at me, and her lawyers like basically making it out like I'm a terrorist. So I had no shot of winning these trials, and the judge involved was not a big fan of mine either. And they kept playing like Dr. Phil episodes. And it was like, I felt like I was like on a murder trial, you know? So I eventually ended up, first one was a hung jury. The second one I lost. And then I went to a higher court. And as soon as I got to the higher courts, they were like, you know, CDA all day. And then I won that case. But the crazier part was, she actually was hooking up with her student and ended up marrying the kid and like having kids with him and the whole thing. Like it was real. And I to this day, I'm just in shock that it even got this far, because the post was actually true in the end. And the judge threw out all the, cause she went to jail for it, or she got arrested for it, for sleeping with her student. Wow. Yeah. So it was crazy to me that I was the one on trial for her, you know,
doing something illegal, and she was doing it.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that was the crazy part, that like a lot of these things that got submitted, even if some of it wasn't true, there was enough there where something was legitimate. You know, there was parts and pieces that were legitimate, but you know, I would get sued all the time. I've been sued 50 times and I've won 50 times. So like, but for me, that was, at the beginning it was scary, but then it got fun, because I would like, you know, I would basically get legal fees, and it would be, if I wasn't getting sued, I felt like I was doing something wrong, to be honest, which is weird.
Now, when you look at like a site like Des Moines, you know, this Instagram page that all they do is just post like blind items, and kind of, it's essentially the dirty.com, but on Instagram, do you laugh to yourself and think, I did this 20 years ago? this was my gig.
I see the same thing with Barstool. I see the same thing with everything. You know, if I wrote it out, I probably would have been huge. But the problem is, you can't have a family. You can't be a normal person with that lifestyle. It's just not possible. Like you become who I didn't want to be the dirty guy. Like that was never my goal in life. You know, like for some people, they want to be TMZ. They want to be, you know, their brand. I wanted to be Nick. I didn't want to be thedirty.com ever. Like that wasn't me. And people that know me are shocked that I created this thing. So that's why I try so hard to distance myself. I've rebranded, you know, I took 2 years off, and I've created other companies that are really successful. But yeah, no, Dax, I see those things all the time, and I laugh because, you know, they think they're so cool, but I look at it from a perspective like, wow, they have no idea. Like that's, cause they didn't have to go through the trenches that I had to go. Like I had to literally pave the way for all these idiots, you know?
How do you find out things are factual? It's, you know, people send you blind items all the time, I'm sure, but you know, how do you decide if it's worth posting or if it's actually accurate?
I don't, you know, it's not my job to decipher what's fact or fiction. That's not what it was. What it was, here's an image, you know, do you think this chick's hot or something? Where we really started becoming successful is because a lot of these politicians or athletes or celebrities would cheat on their spouses, and the girls, the mistresses, would come to us saying, I have no voice, you know, this is what happened. And then I would have to choose if, you know, they're real or fake, but I wouldn't really base it on their story. I would base it on, hey, what factual evidence do you have, which is like a photo or a video. Like when I broke the Carlos Danger and the Anthony Weiner story, which was massive, I basically gambled. She sent me a picture of his toes compared to another picture of his toes, and I had to match the toes to know that these were his D pics. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about this. So
you can talk about it. It's all good.
So yeah, so it's just taking risks and gambles, and like people don't know this too. I broke the Hulk Hogan sex tape. Like that was me that put that out there. They came to me and said, "Hey, we have a sex tape with Hulk Hogan. Do you want to run it?" I'm like, "Hell no! I want nothing to do with it. But send me some screenshots. Let me at least tell people that it exists." And we put it out there, and then TMZ picked it up, and then you know the rest was history. They sent in an envelope to Gawker, and they had fun with it. So there's like little things that people use the dirty for to leak the story. And I wouldn't call it a blind item because I hate, like, I'm not a big blind item fan because it's anyone could say, hey, this person slept with this person or this person was spotted here or whatever. I was more of like, I want to see the image. Like, I want to see the actual factual evidence and run with that. But the honest answer is I couldn't tell you what's real or what's not real. That wasn't my job. My job as a journalist was to get the story, give it some legs. Let it get out there and let the real people do the work.
Yeah.
Well, I know you don't want to obviously talk about the dirty the whole time because this is your past. We're just fascinated because it was obviously such a big website during our, you know, start in the business. But I do want to know, did this site make just a shit ton of money? Because I got to imagine it did.
I got to be careful what I say here because I'm still going through a divorce process. So... So the reality is it made enough money to have a lot of fun. I wouldn't say it made crazy money only because of the content. The content was really hard to monetize. To figure out a niche model like that, you need to have like similar to what like Barstool's doing is they're going towards like the gambling route or the liquor route. You know, you have to find what your, where the money comes from. But back then it was different. We didn't have like programmatic wasn't really a thing back then. Like it wasn't just started coming up, but Google wouldn't even touch the dirty. Like it wasn't even the content. The domain was flagged. So it was really hard to monetize. And the only way to monetize was to make me go on the road and party with people. So that sucked. Like that was the worst because you're going to different cities, you're sleeping with random women, and you feel really guilty about yourself the next day. It's great in the moment, but it was really tough for me because I was getting paid, you know, 10, 25,000 a pop to show up for a couple hours in these different cities and just party with people. So, It took a huge toll on my body. It put me in a pretty dark place because of the alcohol and stuff. But that was the biggest, I would say 75% of the revenue driver. And then the others, you're looking at just direct advertisers and just coming up with different campaigns. But yeah, the traffic was insane. When I say insane, you're talking about a religious cult following, of about 10 million people that literally came to the site. Like you're going to Instagram, you're going to it. Like my average visitor would come to the site at least 16 to 20 times a day. So it was insane.
And yeah, I don't know. And like you said, that double-edged sword of crazy traffic, but we can't get, you know, that big monetization because there's no sponsors that are just flooding you saying, yes, I'd like to be tied to this product.
So the only way to do it, Dax, was to tell them, hey, come hang out with me in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You know what I mean? Like it was that type of a platform, which it was so frustrating because we had so much traffic, but we couldn't figure out how do you monetize each person. We just needed, yep. we just needed a dollar from each person. You know,
it's like,
I mean?
It should have been like a paywall at a certain point. I think people would have paid for the content, but
yeah.
Wow. So interesting.
But it's sold. Everyone cashed out. So it is what it is.
How often were celebrities hitting you up to be on there? Like they wanted to be on it themselves.
It wasn't celebrities as much as it was like new up and coming influencers. You know, like I would get into fake fights with Jake Paul and these guys before they were like big, and all these guys when they were like, I don't know, towards my tail end of the dirty, when they were at like a million followers, they would submit themselves and pretend, like similar to how they do with these boxing fights now, like, Nick, you're an asshole. And I would go back and like, hey, you know, you have a receding hairline, whatever. Like I would just go back with these guys. Right. And it worked for them. Like it built a following, it built a base. But celebrity wise, it wasn't much unless it was like a model or a supermodel or something asking if I would sleep with them. There was a would you section that was like pretty popular, and that was pretty much it. But I would get a lot of girls, like the big one that was when the Ashton Kutcher, Demi Moore, that Sarah Leal girl, she came, you know, we got that information and it was fire. Like that
so
blew up.
Actually, so what was that story? Can you fill us in? So people might not be familiar with that story.
So Ashton Kutcher went down to San Diego. He stayed at the Hard Rock, and these two girls, Sarah Leal, which was the main one who we had the affair with, they were just in the hot tub, and I was getting like play by play, like as it was going down, like I didn't even believe it. Like they were submitting in real time. That's why, how crazy it was to me. These girls were like, hey, we're about to sleep with Ashton Kutcher. And they're submitting themselves to get famous. So I was like, okay, is this real? So I'm hitting up my contacts in San Diego. Like, hey, is Ashton at the Hard Rock? Cause these girls are like taking pictures with him in a hot tub, and they're trying to send them to me, and they verified it was legit. And he put her in a taxi the next day. It was crazy. Like, and I posted it and it was real, and the paparazzi and everyone did their job and followed up on the story, similar to Stormy Daniels. Stormy Daniels came to us and gave us the whole story. And it was crazy to me about the Trump thing. I broke that so long ago, like 2 years before it even hit like anything. And the Wall Street Journal did a full investigation and they won a Pulitzer for it. It was great.
So what do you think is the biggest story the dirty ever broke? Because I mean, just we've in the last 5 minutes talked about some huge stories, but what do you feel like is the biggest one that trumped them all?
I think we had a couple of the Tiger Woods girls that started that whole cycle. I don't know. We've had a lot of big ones. I think if I had to go with the one that did the best traffic wise, I know this is going to sound crazy, but our highest traffic ever, and it's not even, they're not even like, well, I guess they're celebrities now, but Amanda Cerny and Lele Pons.
Their arguments or fights?
Amanda Cerny found out Lele Pons, when they used to be best friends, was deleting her YouTube videos in some kind of jealous war.
Yeah.
And Amanda came to me and said, hey, I found out Lele's doing this to me. I want to submit this. I want to post this and give the play-by-play. I have never seen Dax. I have never seen, like, my servers crashed. And I was like, wow, this influencer thing is like a real thing. And I'm not even kidding. We must have done 100 million uniques in 1 week. It was the craziest thing. And it got picked up by like Vogue and like the most random things. And it was it. That was a wrap. They were never friends again. It was
so funny. We literally just had Amanda on like 2 months ago, and we asked her about that. And like, did you guys ever make up? Like, where are you at with that? And she basically, what did she say, Adam? She said pretty much like, no, but we're not like at war anymore.
Yeah, they don't, it's not like awkward in front of each other, but they're not close, I don't think.
Yeah, but Layla was like deleting her because she didn't want Amanda to surpass her. So it was awesome. And then Amanda was giving me all the info, like, and I was like thinking in my head, I'm like, wow, this is kind of like American Psycho type stuff. And it was awesome.
So like, have your friend's password, delete stuff so that you can get a step ahead. Like, that's some diabolical shit right there.
Yeah, it was awesome. But I've never seen that much traffic in my life. I've never seen, it was like Justin Bieber stuff. It was insane. Like, cause there were, you had two fan bases fighting each other. It was like Black Panther. It was crazy.
How many sex tapes have you seen that like won't go out there? Like that are not out in the public? Celebrity sex tapes.
Probably like 17.
Yeah. Like crazy ones.
I've seen, and don't get me wrong, we've done a lot of catch and kill. The dirty, that was another side of the business that, you know, people don't know. That's a big, I think our industry, if you look at our industry, the totality of where the real money's at, that's where it is. The lawyers are the ones, the Marty Singers, these guys, they make so much money off killing stories and making sure they don't hit the wire. That's something that still needs to be addressed in our industry.
So what does that mean though? Catching, like, again, I'm just talking for the, some people aren't familiar with that and Marty Singer, what he does. So how do they make money? What, tell me that side of the industry that.
Well, it's not just Marty, but yeah, you know, that side of the business is when there is a tape that's out, you have to evaluate, if you get a photo or a tape, you have to evaluate how much you can monetize off that tape. And the problem is with the sex tapes is no advertiser is going to touch it. It's great for traffic, but you can't monetize it. So the only way you can make actual real hard money is the person on that tape itself needs to say, okay, yeah, basically say, hey, you know, take celebrity, A-list celebrity, and the person, you know, that was slept with, and they go to that law firm and they go to a person like Marty or whatever, and they say like, hey, here's the value that we think this is worth. And with the dirty, they did that all the time. They used to come to us and say, hey, tease this, put this out there that, hey, this exists. And then we would never hear from the person again. So they would use us to basically bait the lawyer in or bait the team in and make it go away.
Because I know other sites would buy content like that at a lower price and then just sell it back to the celeb for a much higher price.
Dax, I couldn't afford it. I wish that, but I couldn't afford it. Like you're talking about, and not to be like a blind item person, but there's a very, 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 I would say the highest level tennis player that literally bought their tape back for $10 million. So you're talking about people in price ranges that don't even, we can't even fathom it, you know? So I was never in that ball game. Plus that's just, when you're going down that road, then you're like, you have demons, you know, you have closet demons and you just don't want that. You want to be able to sleep a little bit. But Dax, I don't know if you remember this. This is right when the dirty started. A big story that went away. There was a cheerleader that had an affair with Kobe on the Lakers. Remember, her name was Vanessa Curry. Was it Curry? Not Vanessa Curry. It was something Curry. I think it was Vanessa Curry was her name. But she, the Lakers photoshopped her out of the calendar. And it was one of our first like big breaking stories. And we were riding it so hard. They photoshopped her out of the Laker cheerleaders. And somehow she just vanished off the face of the earth. She was paid to like literally disappear.
Just go away.
It was gone. And this was like in the infancy of the dirty days. And I remember we were emailing their PR and like asking for statements and the whole thing. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen. And it was my first glimpse of catch and kill. That was my very first experience that they literally paid to make a person disappear. And
That's so nuts.
And I think the lawyer on that one was Keith Davidson. So that was the guy that somehow, you know, well, what is that show, Dexter or whatever?
Yeah. Ray Donovan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is the real life Dexter.
So interesting. Yeah. I love this stuff. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting to us, but it's not interesting to people. I don't think.
Might be surprised.
You know, this is the stuff because they're interested in the real deal, but they see a watered down version on most sites, and it doesn't even make most sites because some of the stuff, you know, they also need to keep the relationships with the celebrities and the publicists, so they won't pick up the stories. But this is, you know, we like to say on this podcast, we always like to humanize Hollywood and show like what it really is, the business of it. And this is part of the business and what happens, you know? So it's pretty wild. How many times have you had, you know, it's going to sound like people trying to out celebrities? You know, we see this actor with another male actor, you know, actress and another female actress. How often was that going around?
So I was the one. See how I can do this. So before Anderson Cooper came out, I was going to, for some reason, he just didn't like me. And I was because at that time we were doing that cheerleader trial, and he was on this, he was just on this girl's nuts, just, you know, she would cry on TV and the whole thing. And he would just, Anderson just didn't like me. He just thought I was an evil person. And I was ready to out him. Like literally, I was that pissed off that I was really ready to tell everybody that he was gay. And he beat me to the punch. So there was times like that where back then.
Are you glad that happened? Like, are you glad that you didn't do it though? At the end of the day, like, for your own conscience.
Of course. Dax, I was not a good person. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say like, hey, like, you know, but you have to understand, like, during that time period, people were just not nice. Like, it was just, they felt empowered when you could belittle someone. And it's different now. It's just a different time. But I never took the time to think. I just reacted because I was just in a different mindset. I was like, okay, well, there's nothing like me, and I can just be myself. And I'm starting to feel back to myself now that I'm newly single again, because I was so censored. I was like, being a family guy makes you so, like, I have like emotions and feelings that you have to hold back. But yes, to answer your question, there's part of me that wanted to gut him, but there's another part of me that is like, oh, okay, well, he did it on his own accord. I don't want to be that guy. Because now we're in a different time. You can't do that to people. Like, if you do that, it's like the end of the world. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, obviously you stepped away from the dirt. What was it, 4 years ago you said?
Yeah.
So, since then, like, obviously you've changed a lot, your family situation. What have you been up to since leaving the dirty? Just for people out there that don't know.
It's been getting divorced. That's what he's been doing, bud.
Now I want to know the other stuff before we get to the divorce.
So I went back to school like Van Wilder. I found Saddleback as a community college out here. And I had nothing to do. I tried to golf. I sucked at that. I tried to just do, you know, retirement things. Then I started a company called Relic, since I looked at myself as a relic. And I started consulting. I started basically helping Us Weekly, In Touch, Life and Style, like all these different gossip sites, help them monetize and get traffic. And we crushed it, making millions and millions of dollars. And it was great because I was behind the scenes, just Wizard of Oz, getting exclusives, doing all this stuff. And I still have that business. That business is doing really well. And then I just started a new site called Celeb and celebmagazine.com. And it's just mainstream. I'm trying to go for more of a high-end lifestyle now that I'm 42. I actually like rich things now, and I don't have time for, I can't wait in line. There's just things I can't do anymore because I'm just older. So I like more of the affluent stuff, and I want to showcase the things that I like. I've built a team, and we're doing really, really well. It's almost 1 year, and we've surpassed like the 5 year mark of the Dirty. So, and it's just crazy to me that there's an audience, like my audience has gotten older and more mature, and they're still there. And now I'm starting to shoot my own content, and I'm going to start making it a streaming. We have an app, Celeb app, and I'm going to start doing original content. Still break stories and stuff like that, but I want to show people more of the reality, similar to like what we're doing here and explaining it. I actually want to pull the curtain back. And that's my goal now, is to show people, hey, the other side, the ugly side of media, because people don't see, you know, you see a story go up, but they don't see how the story develops, and they don't see, and Dax knows, you guys both know, like we've been in the bullpens where you have a guy that's just a midget just yelling at you, like belittling you and just going crazy, because we need to break the story before anyone else does. And we have to verify the source. We need to talk to the lawyer. We got to do all this stuff. So I want to show that element to it, but I also want to show the human side of myself and what I'm going through and my struggles. Just trying to be a man in this world and survive. It's just crazy. And it's just a new me. It's the Richie Rich version.
That's cool. I like it. I like the, cause I'm in that same boat of feeling like, you know, you come into the industry doing something and people label you as that. And then you're like, no, now I got to break free from that. I mean, obviously I was at TMZ for 12 years. So that's how everyone knew me, is just Dax from TMZ. So it's been a nice change to just be Dax Holt for once, you know?
Yes.
So I got to imagine the same for you. Do you get along with some of those like old bloggers like Perez and stuff, or no? Yeah. Did you ever?
He just doesn't like me.
No,
he's just not. I don't think I've ever put him down, but he every time he gets a chance, he takes a shot at me, and which makes no sense. I have nothing against the guy. We came up in the same time. He was Paris Hilton. I was Nicole Richie. That was it. Like that was, he went with that way. I went with my way, and I was the straight version. He was the gay version. And it worked out for both of us.
How are you? You know, obviously we just read in your post, you're recently divorced. You know, how are you holding up? You know, I think that's what people really want to know.
It's been really hard because I just don't. She divorced me. So, and it blows my mind that like she has her own fan base and they look at me like I'm some sort of monster. And I was so good in the marriage. Like I'm still in shock. I'm still confused. She decided that she wanted to do it on our anniversary, our 11 year anniversary. I got her a Rolex, a ring, like the whole thing. I was like, hey, here you go. We made it this long, and beautiful family. Everything's, you know, to me, I thought everything was fine. And she just said, hey, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And I want to figure out who I am. And that was that.
It was fully just out of the blue. Like you thought everything was good.
Yeah. And the crazy part is she told me like, hey, you know, I just want to tell you the last 6 months, you're probably the best husband in the world. And I was, and it wasn't that I was trying to be the best husband. I was just, I'm just older. And I just, you know, I care about my children and my family. And I try to provide a lifestyle that I thought she wanted, which was over the top. And I provided and made sure it happened. But there was, you know, there were a lot of elements, you know, like she was doing tapes for Housewives, so we were in the process of being newly casted for the Real Housewives of Orange County, so that was going down in the middle of this, and we had to put on this like facade that, you know, everything's happy go lucky, and. I wasn't about it. First of all, the money was terrible. And the big storyline, which which was this last season, was all about like, hey, like Branwyn and being gay, and then Kelly being so like, you know, politically, her political views. And we're friends with Kelly Dodd, or I'm friends with Kelly Dodd. So I think there was a lot of pushback there because obviously Kelly just got fired. And I think that if we would have decided to stay on, Kelly probably would have stayed on the show because they were looking for different matches. But I don't know where that went. I don't know. In my mind, I think part of the divorce is that they were afraid of me. Like Andy from Bravo is not a fan of mine. So I don't know if that had something to do with it. I don't know. So that's probably a question for David Weintraub, who put the deal together. So I don't know. But yeah, that's going through. That happened. I honestly, guys, I have no idea. It's been like literally, I woke up one day and my life just flipped. There was never been a chance for me to even reconcile. She called her dad. Her dad got her a lawyer. Obviously, he's been through this 6 times or whatever. And I was best friends with her dad. And I just don't understand what I did. Like, I really don't.
Have you talked to her dad at all?
No, he blocked me, cut me off. Like, it's like a full attack. And I'm just shocked that he wouldn't, like, as a father, be like, hey, you guys should probably, like, try to work this out for your children, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm still in that mode of, like, what did I do wrong? But every day I'm waking up and I'm starting to realize, like, wow, this is crazy. Like, I was really silenced in this relationship. I was really, I really held back who I was, trying to be a good father, being a good person. In the last 11 years, she really controlled me, which wasn't a bad thing, but she just really kept secrets in, you know, when I was Nick Ritchie, like I wanted to be out. I wanted to be part of the people. She wanted to be in her hole and in her little bubble. And now I feel great because now I can move. I can go to Miami. I can go to New York. I can have meetings. I can start being who I really am. But from a family perspective, it kills me. Like, you know, I can't even, it's put it this way. I'm paying to see half my children's life. Take away half my children's life and I have to pay someone to do that. How does that make any sense? That's what the actual core of divorce is basically I'm paying someone every month to go live their life and be happy. And I have to sit here and be miserable because I get to miss half my kid's life. So emotionally it kills me inside.
Yeah. That's definitely a perspective to look at it. Do you think there was any like infidelity? I mean, like that's the only thing that I always go to when it's so abrupt and it's like out of the blue that I'm like, what the, like, where did this come from? That's the only thing that I ever kind of just start to question.
And I question it. Obviously I read what she told Page Six and the New York Post. And I was just like,
wait, what did she tell Page Six?
Is that we haven't been intimate in over a year,
yeah.
which is not true. So there's a lot of things that she told them that were lies, which kind of made me think that, okay, is she trying to defend somebody, or is there someone that like out there that she's trying to like, you know, that she's been lying to, saying like, hey, I'm not with Nick that way, but for me personally, honestly, I just don't even want to know. That guy rich as hell. So whoever he is, good luck.
Yeah.
Dang, dude. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's rough. But then, you know, I see a thing in Miami and there's a banner going across the sky, like on the beach, and says like Nick Ritchie is back. What was that?
I'm back. Listen, the reality is the world needs me. I need the world. I'm starting to realize my only best friends are in my DMs. It's a different time. You know, so it's great reconnecting with you guys and just like my old friends and seeing that like everyone's on the come up, and they, for the first time ever, I'm starting to see individuality. Like everyone's actually like getting outside of their box and becoming their own brand. And I feel like I have a lot to do with that because I inspire people to be themselves. And I have a lot to give. And I think that I've been selling the world short because I've been giving myself to Shane. I've been giving myself to family when the reality is the world is my family. And I have to be okay with being that guy. And I am. And I think not only Miami, not only Vegas, I want to go international. I really think I have my goals are so lofty, but I know I can hit them because I've done them before. So I am back, boys. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, dude. And I know you're doing stuff in Vegas right now. Like you got some big things in Vegas right now. Tell us about this stuff.
Yeah, I signed a deal with Resorts World, which is the new hotel on the Strip right across from Wynn. It's massive. It's amazing. I can't wait for you guys to see it. I have a three appearances there this year, or yeah, 20 through 2022. So it's a 2 to 3 year deal. And I'm a white tiger again. I show up, take pictures, make love, and get out of there.
So are these club appearances? It's just come party with Nick Ritchie kind of thing?
It's a little bit different because now I'm like gearing towards the face of hospitality. So I'm literally showcasing properties, doing video content, but also like doing the club thing, but also showing face, walking around the property, taking pictures and basically embracing this as my new home. And Vegas has always been good to me. And now I'm like super excited because it's brand new. It's something fresh. And all the big celebrities are getting behind it. Brody Jenner is going to be DJing there. Paris Hilton's DJing there. So now you're having different perspectives outside the box of the big DJs. You're having the celebrity DJs. So I think it's going to be really, really good. I'm really excited about it, to be honest.
And not only that, dude, you're in the crypto world. It's a hard world to explain, but what's your involvement in it?
So I have Nickcoin, Nick being me, and I did it the opposite way. Like everyone's just like basically going with the flow. I'm like, okay, I want a coin where it's based on my productivity and my success. So basically people are investing in, it's called BitClout, but I have an actual coin under Nick Ritchie that you can just put 10 bucks in or whatever. It started at $150 and now it's over 1,000. And I'm like in it for the long haul. This isn't like a cash out quick kind of thing. Cause I really think I can get this coin up to 10 to 15,000. So anyone who's like an old school fan of mine, or just wants to put some money in there and then walk away for like 5 years, this is how you do it, because it's going to be based off my success. So the more I climb, the more the coin value rises. Everyone, listen, I think all the crypto stuff, it's high volatility, it's high risk, but if you want something that's solid, as long as I'm alive, we're going to make a lot of money. So Nickcoin is my coin, and it's actually Sean Phillips. I don't know if you guys know who Sean Phillips is, the football player. He told me, I asked him, what do you invest in? And he said, only invest in yourself. So that's what I'm doing. I'm investing in myself. And listen, I've never lost except for marriage, 0-2 in marriage. But other than that, like I can pull this off and make people a lot of money.
That's awesome. I was thinking, because the other day, I think I saw something. I was like, I went to go look up myself, but I had to like sign up for an account. I was like, never mind. I'm out. But I like this concept of invest in yourself. It's like the perfect way to go into crypto if people are not like, you know, wanting to or are nervous about crypto. Because like you said, there's so much volatility that you're like, I don't know what to invest in. I don't know what's going to take off, where I'm going to lose money. So for me, I just tend to stay out of it. But I like this idea of you pushing your own coin. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about it because if it fails, it's on me. It's not on you. It's on me, you know? So, and I'm not a big person who believes in that, in like that failure stuff. Like I wake up every day and I'm so excited about how do I win? How do I win? You know? So, I think it's going to be really, really good. I know Mike Walters has put in a lot of money, so I can't fail.
That's funny, dude.
That's awesome, dude. Well, listen, Nick, it's great to have you on the podcast. I'm glad you're on the right path. You're in a good place, and I'm excited to see what happens with the coin. Excited to see what happens in Vegas. And you're also doing this travel series, dude. What you're all over the place. What is this travel series?
So I'm shooting right now. Everyone download the Celeb app. So I'm shooting original content. 10M is the name of the travel show. It's directed by Z, who's really big in Vegas, Zarnaz. She put together a package, and then I have a producer. Like, I have a real team doing this. It's crazy. And we're basically showcasing all the coolest spots around the world, where I basically go in there and try to find myself through high-end places. The last episode we did was in Big Sky, Montana. I've never been in the snow before. Like, I'm Persian. Like, it's not a thing. So I went out there, and I was just, you know, I'm seeing things for the first time. I'm opening up my mind, and it's just amazing. And then we have Jamaica next, and then I have Lake Como. Like, there's a whole bunch of cool spots on the horizon. But I'm also shooting like 5 other shows. Richie Rides is one, Richie Rich. So it's going to be all original content that you can find on the app, because I'm going to make this thing into the new media wave of like Netflix. It's going to be so cool. And eventually you guys are going to have your own show. It's going to be really good. You know,
I like it. Nick.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, follow Nick Ritchie. You know, check out his Celeb magazine. Again, it's a high-end magazine that's coming out. It's really cool. Look out for his travel series. Invest in his coin, because he's a raising stock. He's a good dude. And honestly, I know for myself, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in if it wasn't for guys like Nick to kind of create the path. And he's a legend. The guy is a legend. Nick, thank you so much for joining us, brother.
Anytime. Hopefully I can do this again in 6 months to a year. Let's see where I get. Let's see if I'm still here.
Nick Ritchie, man, he's how close was his relationship with, you know, because he had a different site, but how close was his relationship with like TMZ when you were working there at the time?
No, I think we were really close. I mean, I've known Nick for, I think it's like, again, 15 years or something like that. Just because, like he said, he was breaking a lot of stories, and, you know, and those stories turned into bigger stories on TMZ, you know, when they got flushed out even more. And it's funny because he really was like the party boy, and he's so different now, just in the way we talk to him. Like,
yeah,
he was always just like crazy, crazy party guy. And I can tell now he is family man. Yeah. You know, it's a fun transition. You know, I like seeing those changes in people over the years, because I feel the same way. Like, my life changed so much after getting married and having children, and, you know, your perspectives on life change a lot.
Yeah. Who was in his crew? Who was he hanging out with, though? Was he hanging out with celebrities, or was he just kind of partying and just around the scene?
I felt like he was always the guy that was like, no, I don't want to be friends with celebs, because his website, once you become friends with celebs, then you tend not to want to break the stories. You know what I'm saying? Like, then when a story comes in and it's good, but it's your friend, you're like, oh, I don't want to post it. So I feel like he was one of those people that was always like, nope, work and play, and I'm not going to cross them. So just don't be friends with anyone.
Yeah, I struggle with that myself. I'm like, how do I, because I, you know, I'm not a bad guy, and I struggle with like how much of it, you know, sometimes with some of these celebrities, like, do I want to kind of go a little extra? Do you know, and where is the line? You know, where, like, yeah, of course I would love to be friends with some of these people, but realistically, it's like, they're not going to be my friends, you know, not all of them. So I'm like, especially, it's not even the celebrities, it's the publicist. So I'm like, fuck the publicist. I'm going to, you know, like, I'll even shoot the people, not because I want to, it's because your publicist was an asshole, you know, and it's like, your team's not cool, you know? So yeah, it's been weird for me, but thank you guys for listening. And you could leave a review. That's the best thing to do. Support this podcast is leave a 5-star review. And we read reviews.
Leave those reviews, people, please. And then, you know, if you want to be a part, we didn't do it today. We didn't do fan chat, fan question roulette, just honestly just didn't get to it. But if you want to be a part of it, submit us a video. You can DM us on Instagram, or you can call us up and leave us a message at 833-HWR-LINE, 833-HWR-LINE. But we love having people part of the show.
Yeah. So you find me at Adam Glenn. From this podcast, we're on, you know, we have the video components on YouTube, we're on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we're on it all. You can find Dax Holt at DAXHOLT. We'll see you guys next time.
A Huda Media Production.